Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT Live Special number 196, recorded April 6th, 2014. Tim's Vermeer. Hey, everybody. Welcome to a TWiT Live Special. You may have seen the triangulation we did with Tim Jennison. Tim, that must be 8 or 9 months ago. Tim is the founder of the New Tech Company, which makes our fabulous TriCaster. He's kind of a wizard in his own right, an inventor and a geek, and discovered, he thinks, and I think I agree, the technique that Dutch masters like Vermeer used to create their paintings. A movie was made and is now out. When you were here last, Tim, we were talking about it, called Tim's Vermeer. It's a Penn & Teller film, and it is going around the country to great response. At all the film festivals in New York and Toronto and at Telluride, people just raved about it, but now you can see it in the theaters. Tim Jennison joins us for an update. Hi, Tim.
Yo.
I was asking you, where is Tim's Vermeer?
Oh, my painting is hanging over the fireplace in my bedroom now.
That's awesome.
And I wake up in the morning and look at it and think, man, that was hard.
If you didn't see the triangulation, you may not know what we're talking about. So can you give us an update, Tim? How did you, first of all, come to even be thinking about how Vermeer made his paintings?
Well, my daughter bought me a book by David Hockney in 2002. She bought it for me. And Hockney, basically, it's called Secret Knowledge. And Hockney said art made a big change in the late Renaissance and started looking a lot more realistic. And coincidentally, it was the same time optics started getting pretty good. And so the premise of the book is that maybe a lot of artists were using optical tools. So I got interested in it, being a kind of an optics television guy, started reading up on it. And I had seen some Vermeers in museums. And
everybody's seen The Girl with the Pearl Earring, probably his most famous painting.
Yeah, when you see them in a museum, they just sort of pop out. You know, there's something a little too good about them.
Hyper-real.
It's like photorealism, modern photorealism. Of course, photographic cameras were still way in the future in 1650 when Vermeer painted these. Photography was invented in 1839, so that was a long time coming. And as soon as cameras were invented, photographic cameras, people started noticing the similarities to Vermeer's. And I'm not the first. But it suddenly struck me one day how he might have done this, using a very simple technique, just a mirror, a flat mirror, that would reflect the subject, and then you could look over the edge of the mirror and match it to your paint. And you would be tracing not only the shapes of things, but the color of things. And if it worked, you would have essentially a handmade photograph. So I tried it on my kitchen table, and it worked way too well. and I go, man, this really works great. And,
now, you're not a painter, right?
No, I'd never painted before. I took art in high school, but, we did pencil sketching and stuff like that. I never got into oil or acrylic painting. So I started searching online for anything about this concept and couldn't find anything. So at that point, I had dinner with Penn Jillette, and I told him about the project. The concept, and he said, "What are you going to do with this?" And I said, "I'll probably write a paper or do a YouTube video." And he said, "No, we're going to make a movie out of this." And it took us 5 years, but the movie is out. It's been out for about 10 weeks now.
It didn't open nationwide, as they say. It's been
it's a limited release, yeah. And it's rolling out to more cities. But it is already the top grossing documentary of the year, so we're happy about that.
Would you be eligible for an Oscar in this year if it? Oh no, you didn't. You got nominated, didn't you?
Yeah, we got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
We got nominated for a BAFTA, which is I'm sorry, we were on the shortlist for the Oscars, and we were nominated by BAFTA, which is the British Oscars. You know, a lot of awards and stuff. Got to go to England for the awards ceremony, and the prince was there.
Oh, how fun.
We all had to stand up when the prince came in.
So you decided to take one of Vermeer's paintings and literally duplicate it using what you thought his technique was. You picked the music lesson. Why the music lesson?
Well, the concept is all about matching the lighting, and I felt that the best way to prove the concept would be to make a model, a scale model, full-scale, full-size room, identical to the one Vermeer painted.
Wait a minute. So not only do you have to make the optical stuff, you actually have to duplicate the original he was painting from.
Yeah, and that's where it got kind of out of control.
Now, folks, if you're looking at the video, you're looking at a painting, and I defy you to tell me, is this the original by Vermeer or Tim Jennison's copy? I bet you Tim can't even tell. It's actually your copy.
Oh, no, I see nothing but differences, Leo.
You can tell. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Vermeer's brushwork was much more refined. You know, the closer you get, the easier it is to see the difference.
Unfortunately, the original is in Buckingham Palace, so most of us get a chance to look at it close.
Right. you know, I had to build this room, and that took about a year. Fortunately, I know how to run machine tools and, you know, rapid prototyping stuff. And I did have to learn how to make lenses the way they made them in the 1600s.
Did you grind your own lenses?
Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. Because, you know, I knew that if I had used a modern lens and done the project, immediately someone would say, totally invalid because they didn't have lenses like that. So I made a lens like they used, and wasn't a problem at all. The quality of the lens was fine.
You actually even had to do things like build the harpsichord that's in the music lesson.
Yep, there it is. Yeah, it's a company called Ruckers, a Flemish company that made these harpsichords, and there were a lot of them. They were sort of like the Steinway of the time. And there are a lot of them still left in museums, but I couldn't get a hold of one. But we know exactly what Vermeer was looking at, because that pattern on the front, that little seahorse thing and the little squiggles, were printed papers. So those papers are still on those harpsichords, and they are identical from instrument to instrument, basically. And so I was able to make an exact copy of that instrument. There's a chair in the painting that they called a Spanish chair, and has these two lion heads at the top, the finials they're called. And those chairs appear in a lot of Vermeer's. And so I had to make one of those too. I found some examples in a museum in Delft, Holland. Took a lot of pictures from different angles, made a 3D model, and manufactured the chair. The other thing I had to manufacture was the window frames at the left side of the picture. There's very characteristic sort of architectural features in those windows and the little stained glass panels. I did not learn how to do stained glass. I'm not that obsessive.
And yet, this is kind of a fun project because you had to make furniture. You had to do glass. You had to do stuff that, you know, one wouldn't think, but in fact, you had to grind lenses. So you made these. Why didn't you learn stained glass?
Well, there's a limit, believe it or not. So I had a laser cutter engraver, and I just put black plexiglass, did a CAD drawing of the little lines, you know, the lead strips between the panes, and cut that on a laser engraver and just glued it to another piece of plexiglass, and that's close enough. And you can tell looking at the painting what you're seeing, if you know what you're looking at, that it doesn't look anything like stained glass.
Well, and that's an interesting thing. This optical technique reproduces it so exactly that you can actually look and say, well, that's actually not glass or...
Exactly.
Like that. Although when I look at the detail in the tapestries, you can see every stitch. It's remarkable.
Yeah, that I painted in a very different way from Vermeer. He painted it much quicker. That carpet right there turned out to be, you know, the most amount of work. It took about 35% of the total time of the painting. And I painted every little stitch of that thing.
See that.
And It was quite painful.
At what point? Now, how long did it take to do the painting? Well, first, how long did it take to do the set?
Over a year.
And then you've got the set. You actually have to dedicate a room to it, right?
I had to knock a wall down to make room for a third window that Vermeer had.
And by the way, thanks to Vanity Fair, they did an article on you in November, and they got great images of you and the painting and everything. So that's nice. You were working from a photograph? No, you were working from the room.
Well, I built the room from
a photograph of the painting.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah. And had a little help there from Philip Stedman, who wrote a book about Vermeer and optics. Before my project, it was called Vermeer's Camera.
So this isn't a completely novel notion that he might have used optical.
No, it goes back at least 100 years.
But nobody'd ever proven it by doing it.
Nobody'd ever figured out a way to actually paint from that camera image, that camera obscura image.
The technique was lost.
Yeah, everybody knew that you could project an image upside down and backwards on a white wall. That's a very common thing. It's called a camera obscura.
Yeah, my mom does that. Well, first of all, you can do it with a pinhole camera. There are lots of ways to do it. But my mom has done that with her painting in the past, to take an image and to convert it into a painting. So painters use this.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Norman Rockwell, for example, said, I used the Balopticon, which was his brand name for his opaque projector. He said, I don't talk about it much, but it saves so much time. If you try to paint on a projection, you know, it seems intuitively like that should work great. And it doesn't work great at all. It gets in the way. And, as soon as you start to paint, you start to obscure what you're trying to paint. And you change the color of the projection. And you have no idea what you've done. You have to turn the lights on.
Right.
So the addition of this extra little mirror that I call a comparator mirror lets you match those colors for the first time. The first time in 300 and some years, because I think it is likely that Vermeer knew this trick.
So I'm looking at the picture in Vanity Fair of you actually painting. Now, some of what we're seeing, I think, are Penn and Teller's cameras.
Yes. There were up to 9 cameras running.
Because they're making a documentary as you're painting. Yeah.
Well, and of course, I had to run all those cameras. I was usually working alone.
Oh, so they didn't come.
They did from time to time, but, you know, every day for 3 years.
Would you make a documentary for us, Tim? And we'll so you'd start the cameras. How long each day would you spend at the painting?
It would average maybe 3 to 4 hours of actual
painting. Oh, man.
But and I would take a lot of breaks.
That's why you're saying painful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard on the back because you have to lean over the mirror and look straight down. And it really, really, you know, the back muscles are what takes the heat.
At any point did you think, what am I doing? This is nuts.
No. You know, once I got into it, it's full speed ahead. And there was a time when, a very bad time, when it looked like the whole thing was not going to work and my experiment was going to be a failure. And it just wasn't, you know, what I pictured in my mind that would work. I thought that Vermeer could take this mirror and work from this dim projection on a white wall. So he would have the projection and he'd have the mirror and he'd look at the projection. It's too dark and it's too fuzzy.
Yeah.
Especially with the 17th century lens. A modern lens would be much sharper, but that was not an option. So I discovered that I had to add one more mirror, and then everything started working. But Teller interviewed me at that low point in the project when I was going, oh, shoot, you know, this isn't going to work. And he put me on camera. It was one of his one of the shoots that he did in San Antonio. And he said, you think this is going to work? And I said, yeah, I think there's a way to do this. And he said, well, you know, if it doesn't work, it's going to be a very different film. I said, we're not going to finish it, right? He said, oh, yes, we are. We're going to make a film.
You're stuck one way or the other. Yeah.
So that was motivation. You know, just the stress level went up a couple notches.
We're talking to Tim Jennison, the founder of New Tech, the chairman of New Tech, and obviously a passionate dilettante, the guy.
That's a good word.
That's a good word because, I mean, I don't want to say hobbyist. This is much more than that. But he recreated a classic Vermeer, The Music Lesson, using optical techniques he believed Vermeer had pioneered hundreds of years ago and long ago lost. Here's a picture from the Vanity Fair article that I think is a little bit more accurate. Tell us what you're looking at here, Tim.
Well, you're seeing me looking down through the comparator mirror, and it's nothing but a flat mirror, a couple inches square. It could be, I've used a round mirror, various shapes, but they have to be about that size. And you can see right below my nose there, the mirror, and it's mounted on a strange little hockey puck thing that's got adjustment screws on the back, which allowed me to change the angle of the mirror with very fine control. You don't really need that, but it helped. So I'm looking at the edge of the mirror. I can see my hand and my paintbrush and the paint.
Okay.
Because I'm looking over the edge of the mirror.
Yeah.
In the mirror, I see reflected the room out there that I'm painting, and I see exactly that spot. As I move my head back and forth, I can sort of A-B.
Mm.
I can see the room, then the painting, then the room, then the painting, just by shifting my head. So if you were to watch, that's a still photo there, but if you were watching me painting, I'd be doing this, sort of davening back
uh-huh.
and forth.
Uh-huh.
And so you can, with that A-B, you can see any difference right away between the two. And if
wow.
you stop your head and just position the edge of the mirror right across the spot you're painting, there you can compare the paint color exactly. Because if you have the right color, the edge of the mirror basically disappears. You can't see it. It's so close in color that you can't see the edge of the mirror. So it's like if it's too dark or too light, you'll see the mirror. So it's just like a kind of a binary thing. Either you have the right color of paint or you don't. Now, sometimes you quit before it's quite perfect because, you know, you can get obsessive and you can refine this. Whatever item you're painting, you can refine it forever. You can sit there for hours and hours, but you have to move on. Especially when I was painting my daughter.
That's your daughter sitting at the harpsichord.
Yeah, she's standing there.
Oh, she's standing. She's the yeah. cavalier standing who's teaching the lesson.
Yeah, they stood... to play these instruments.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, so she's the girl in the yellow dress.
Yep. And I used a mannequin to paint her clothes as well as the gentleman.
So as you're working, this is a picture from the movie that you're working on the set of.
Yeah, I'm actually building optical prototypes there, trying to solve my problem and make the thing work.
Wow.
But yeah, you can see the room in the background there.
Yeah, these are mannequins.
Yeah. And they did this in the Dutch Golden Age too. They used mannequins. Life figures, and in fact, the word mannequin is a Dutch word to do clothes. But when I was painting the faces and hands, you know, they had to be there, and so I was conscious of my daughter's discomfort, you know, as I was painting. So I went very quickly,
right?
And the faces on the painting are roughed in, you know, they're more painterly. You can see brush strokes in them because I was going so fast trying to get them. Off the set so they could relax.
Here's a picture from the movie of you grinding your glass.
Yeah, it's done on a kind of a potter's wheel.
Yeah, it looks like
a lapidary wheel.
Yeah.
And in Vermeer's time, these would have been maybe windmill powered, or powered in some other way, sometimes by foot pedals and so forth, or hand cranks. But that's how they made them. So the first step in making a lens is... figuring out what the curvature is, and then you make a big brass dish with that curvature scooped out of the front of it, and it's not very deep, you know, it's maybe a half inch deep in the center. Then you put that brass dish down on the lapidary wheel. You put some abrasive in it, and you take your glass and just start grinding.
Wow.
You're moving around that you can see the wooden handle that I've attached to the back of the glass plate there. And this part of the painting, I'm actually polishing the flat side of the lens. So that's just a flat surface there. The brass dish is not on the wheel right at this point.
Yeah, because you don't need curve on the flat side, right?
Right, yeah. So it saves you half the work if you make a plano convex lens as opposed to a double convex lens, which would be twice as much work.
This is just an amazing effort, and I just honor you for your obsession. Here's your daughter getting fitted for the costume. What did your family think of this as this is going on?
Oh, they were totally into it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And in fact, my daughter, Natalie, who is in the background of that picture, she was my girl Friday, I guess I can call her that, on this project. And she was there to assist me most of the time we were shooting.
That's great.
And she logged all the footage, 2,400 hours material.
Wow.
We shot. She logged it all. And she also transcribed all the anything that was spoken, which was volumes, over the course of several years of this project. So you could type in search terms and, find the footage that you were looking for.
Holy cow. That's a useful thing to have.
Yeah.
Wow. Here's a from the movie, a picture of a lens that didn't quite make it.
Yeah. It flew off the handle and hit the floor, and after which I flew off the handle. And hit the
ceiling. I bet you don't look happy.
No, I was not happy there. But that happened, I think 6 or 8 attempts at grinding lenses and had to melt the glass. First I'd make plaster molds for the lens.
Wow.
Put them in a pottery kiln and, put the crushed glass into it, and it would melt and sink into the mold. And then I would grind it and polish it.
Did you show David Hockney your results? What did he think?
David Hockney is pretty convinced, maybe more convinced than I am, that Vermeer did it. And he, but he's got a dog in the hunt. He brought out this book, Secret Knowledge, and the art history world and art critics basically reamed him for it. And said, "You're trying to tear down these mythical geniuses," and he wasn't trying to do that at all. And he really didn't deserve the way he got treated. But when he saw the painting, he goes, "Oh, it's got to be something like this,"
Because you have no training.
Exactly. Yeah, that's part of the experiment that I thought would add some weight to it. Because otherwise you just say, "Well, Tim Jensen's obviously." Good enough to do that.
Right.
But no.
How's the reaction to the movie been? Because now it's out and about and people are seeing it all over the country.
People really, really seem to like it.
And everybody I've talked to just raves about this movie.
And I've been to several screenings at film festivals. And it's interesting. People... I'm a little too close to the forest to see the trees. I'm not sure what this movie's about, really. But they come up to me and say, "I'm in the arts. I'm a writer. I write novels or whatever. But this film tells my story.
Right.
I paint the dots on that carpet. And the public doesn't realize the incredible amount of work that goes into creative process." And it's just a grind, and they just see the finished result and go, "Oh, that's neat. What else you got?"
Right.
And people seem to mention their projects that they need to get back to work on.
Yeah.
It has that effect on people.
Yeah. I think somebody said that's what the movie is about. It's about your obsession, your passion for the project, not about the painting, not about Vermeer. Although go ahead.
We thought it would be about Vermeer. I mean, we started, that's what we thought it was about. And when it came down to editing, there was so much material there and so many little sidebars and different tangents that we'd taken. And there was, like I said, 2,400 hours of footage. There's me talking to the camera for at least 45 minutes every day.
Wow.
Penn went into a room with some cameras and sort of ad-libbed a kind of a skeleton of a script, what the movie would be about. As he was ad-libbing it, he was not really talking about Vermeer. He was talking about me.
Yeah.
And then Teller fleshed that out. And Teller is a great storyteller, no pun intended. And he was able to educate the viewer just enough to get, this kind of arcane stuff. You have to know a lot of things to follow the plot of this thing. You have to know who Vermeer was. You have to know what scholars have thought about Vermeer. You have to know a little bit about optics. You have to know a little about human vision and why it's imperfect, and you know why some things are really hard for us to see. You have to know what a virginals is. You know, you have to know that's a type of harpsichord, because we keep using that word in the movie. So Teller very carefully slips all these things in it on you. And we use computer graphics to do these diagrams that hopefully are easy to follow. And, you know, with all that effort, occasionally there are people that say, I don't get how that worked. What were you doing? You know, it looks like I know what I'm doing when I'm painting, because the camera is seeing it from a different angle and it's not seeing it from my eyeball. If you saw it from my eyeball, you see the edge of the mirror moving up and down and, you know, A, B, and tracing the colors. The camera off to the side just shows me my hand, you know, confidently painting these strokes. And so it is, you know, despite all the effort Teller went to, it's still a tough concept to get across. The hardest thing to get across is the idea that you can't really see what you think you see. We have a scientist, Colin Blakemore, try to explain the limitations that are right in the human retina. So if you're looking at a white wall like this, you know, you can tell that down at the bottom it's darker and at the top it's lighter. But your eye is lying to you. It's much more contrasty than that. And it has to do with this, how big it is in your field of view. So if you're standing right in the room there, you tend to see it as a solid shade of white. And that's what ticked me off, actually, when I saw the Vermeers, that there was something going on here, because he painted those walls according to the laws of physics, and the eyeball doesn't see it. But if you don't believe me, there's some optical illusions. You might want to look them up online. There's one called the checker shadow illusion, and there's one called the corn sweet illusion that show you how the retina is lying to you. But still, you know, after the movie's been out now, that's what people don't really get, and they don't really believe it. They go, I can see just fine. I don't know about you.
Well, the good news is you're going to get to see this film, because it's opening in many, many more theaters this week. If you go to sonyclassics.com/Tim's Vermeer, they've got a schedule of all the theaters in all over the country now that you can see the movie in many, many cities. And everybody, it's not yet in Petaluma. The minute it does, I'm going. But everybody who's seen it just raves about Tim's Vermeer. I'm glad that it's getting the attention that it deserves. And
you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, darn.
I haven't seen it yet. Actually, I won't say where I got it, but I got a copy of it somewhere. But I wanted to see it in the theater. I want to see the big
Don't say that too loud.
Actually, it's a really good website they put together for the film. I'm actually quite impressed.
Yeah, and that's all Sony. They just got great people at Sony.
Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't have asked for a better experience. They've just been phenomenal from start to finish.
Well, who did the editing? Was it Penn?
No, a guy named Patrick Sheffield in Los Angeles.
Boy.
And Teller was watching a bunch of demo reels from different editors. And he took this decision very seriously. Penn watched them too. And when they were trying to hire a cinematographer and an editor. And there was one reel that kind of caught Teller's eye, and he went to talk to the guy, Patrick. And Teller sat down with Patrick and he said, I'm doing this film or documentary about this guy who thinks he figured out how Vermeer was able to get the colors right in those paintings and get the realism. And it's kind of a sort of a technological thing. And Patrick said, wait a minute, was he using a mirror at an angle?
He got it.
And Teller said, I either have to kill you or hire you, because this is top secret, you know. But yeah, you guessed it. And Patrick jumped into this and knows, you know, almost everything there is to know now about Vermeer and optics. You know, he jumped in just as hard as I did.
You got to have a little passion. You got to have a little enthusiasm for all of this. Tim's Vermeer, it's in a theater near you. Go find it. Visit sonyclassics.com/Tim's Vermeer to find one. And Tim, I'm so glad the movie's out and people are raving about it. And I'm glad you could come back and update us a little bit. What are you working on next? You have another obsessive project you're trying to...
Well, I have too many hobbies, and occasionally they get way out of control like this one did. Right now, I guess I'm still stuck in this obsession because I'm trying to write a book about the whole thing and everything that I learned. I did an enormous amount of research before I even started and found some really interesting things that weren't in the movie. And, you know, there's I'd also like to explain how the machine works exactly and how you can try it. There isn't enough information in the movie to replicate this experiment. And you know, I can explain all the dead ends that I went down and why I did. And
so the book will have the plans you need to make it yourself.
And there's also a lot more evidence I found, optical evidence in the Vermeer picture. Once I was able to get a high-res scan of the music lesson from the Royals, I can put that in the computer and process it. And you know, there's just a lot of interesting stuff. You know, the book could be an encyclopedia if you wanted, but you know, the challenge is, you know, kind of like the challenge Teller had, boiling 2,400 hours down to 80 minutes. You know, making it accessible.
Well, at least we'll have a roadmap. Have the Royals seen the movie?
Yes.
They own the painting.
When we were trying to get into Buckingham Palace to film, we were dealing with the gentleman, Desmond Shaw Taylor, who is the surveyor of the Queen's pictures.
Oh, my.
That's his title.
What a nice job.
The Queen has something like 2,000 paintings in her possession. And so Desmond is in control of that. And you know, the subject of the movie was secret, and we couldn't really tell them about it. And they turned us down. They said, no, you can't come and film. But they did let us come in and look at it. But then after the painting was finished, I went back to Desmond's office, and he's got like these 30-foot ceilings and bookcases all around him in St. James Palace. And I was trying to talk him into doing a high-res scan of the painting for scientific study. But suddenly I jumped off the script and started telling him about my project.
Oh, good.
And I didn't know what to expect, because here's this kind of highbrow art critic, art historian guy. And I was explaining to him, I said, so then I did this mirror and the camera obscura lens and blah, blah, blah. And then I painted this picture and it looks very much like a Vermeer. And he goes, what? You did what? And he said, and it turns out he's an optic guy.
Ah, perfect.
And he's tried to use a camera obscura himself. He's tried to figure it out.
Excellent.
And he said, where's your painting? And I said, well, it's down at the hotel, the Park Plaza Hotel. He said, can I go see it?
Ah, so well, I'll trade you.
I'll show you mine.
Yeah, exactly.
And so he went over and looked at it, and I had to demonstrate the technique for him, because I had a mirror there, and I did a little pencil sketch. And he said, man, I've got some homework to do. But anyway, we saw him again a month ago when we were in London for the BAFTA ceremony. And he is a big fan of the film.
Good.
And we sat and talked for a couple hours about art. You know, he was playing devil's advocate. I don't think he quite buys the theory. But we had a great discussion.
That's great.
And I offered, you know, next time you're in the States, the colonies, come by Texas and see the room.
That's pretty exciting. I'm so pleased. I look forward to the book. We'll have you back one more time when the book comes out. And I presume that you have many things to show. NewTek has many things to show at NEB this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always exciting to see the NewTek booth.
I came from there, I'm in one of our hospitality suites right now. But, yeah, it's the booth looks great, and, yeah, we got some good stuff to show.
It's always one of the best-looking booths, I got to say. And is Kiki doing the demo again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kiki and Rex and Anna. And
they're so good.
Whole group.
Tim, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on your success. Thanks for the painting, and let me say again, thank you for the TriCaster, because we couldn't do what we do without it.
You're welcome. And thanks for having me back.
Thanks. Tim Jennison. He's the chairman of NewTek, the creators of the TriCaster, and the artist behind Tim's Vermeer. You can find the movie at a theater near you.